is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
See Live Off the Record with Zhivago Lang is brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts, Nay's Pancake Place, Prince Masters, RF Bank and Trust, and Royal Star Assurance.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Zhivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, on this beautiful Monday afternoon. By the way, I have a feedback going on, producer, so if you can help, be grateful. If you want to give us a call today on the show, the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. So you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043, 439-3043. You can call us from the Family Islands on 242-300-5720. That's 242-300-5720. We are live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969, or you can catch us on BTC Flow channel 612. That's BTC Flow channel 612. I want you all to know that every time you hear me say, you can catch us on Cable Bahamas 969. I am still pressed to say that's the way my mother listens to the show. Still, I have to fight not to say so. It's really something. No, I'm not getting any feedback anymore, producer. We're good. Thank you very much. Thank you. Hey, I hope you had a good weekend, folk. Got some rest, recreation, and all ready for the week ahead. So the unions in the Bahamas, many of them, can't say all of them, seem agitated, disgruntled, frustrated with the government of the Bahamas. So much so that they are threatening a general strike. A strike, you know, for 1 or 2 days over unmet commitments. They are saying unresponsiveness to this, that, and the next thing. Even the Bahamas Union of Teachers, President Belinda Wilson, indicating that the unions are, her union is not striking and their trade union is not striking. I must confess that I reached out to her today and I said, you know, I listened to your voice note, yet people are saying that school, because teachers are not showing up to school here in Grand Bahama. That's what I reliably know to be kids. So to which she indicated that no, the other union to which teachers belong, most of whom are out of Grand Bahama, they have not showed up, but not her members. Okay. So the schools, at least in Grand Bahama, are being affected by some industrial action. I know that would be the case for sure. Okay. Trade Union, Congress, Obie Ferguson and them threatening, even while the government says that their threat is without merit, regard being hard to the law, and so forth and so forth. There's even some indication that, this is being orchestrated by the opposition and people, so forth and so forth. So I want to talk about this because what I'd like to ask is this. What was the point of the memorandum of understanding that was signed by the unions with the Progressive Liberal Party with the pledge to support them in the upcoming general election at the last election? Do you all remember that? Because there's a lesson in here. This is a significant lesson here. On August 26th, 2021, the Nassau Guardian carried a story, PLP signs MOU with unions. It shows a picture of the then leader of the opposition and now Prime Minister and Minister of Finance of the Bahamas shaking hands with union leaders who had signed on to this memorandum of understanding with the Progressive Liberal Party, then in opposition. Bear this in mind. These unions did not sign this memorandum of understanding with the sitting government. They signed it with the opposition party of the country. What does that tell you? They had decided to throw their lot in with a partisan group contesting the general election. So in other words, these unions were very much in their stance at election time in 2021. This was August. Election was due September 21st. You can't get more partisan. You can't get more directly partisan than that. In fact, according to this article, the union said, and I quote, "The parties agree that the PLP will be supported by the labor movement to become the next government of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas," end quote, the draft states. Now remember, this is a draft I don't know that anybody saw, because even in this story it says that they did not disclose the MOU, because the prime minister, the then opposition leader, said he had to go take it to their council and blah, 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 and blah, and so forth and so forth. But nobody, I don't know that this was ever published in that way, but the draft said the unions pledged to support the PLP in the upcoming general election. And this is what the union leaders said. "I can assure all workers," this is in quote, "the 200,000 plus workers in this country, when we disclose to them the terms, the proposals, the initiatives that we worked out, that we have been able to work out with the Progressive Liberal Party, it will be clear to them as to why we are where we are." Meaning, why we, the NTCU and the TCU, the National Trade, what is that, the NTCU? Anyway, and the TCU, why both of them decided to go this direction. In quote again, "We are now one. We are indeed one organization. I know that you would want me to go into specifics, but I do not intend to do that. What I'm prepared to say to you is we have reached an agreement." I remember the heralding of this memorandum of understanding. I remember that not all unions were on board. Some felt like this was not an appropriate thing to do. But I remember it. I remember how it was heralded, how strategic it was, how problematic it was for the sitting government contesting the general election, and how prideful the Progressive Liberal Party's leadership was that this had been done. Because clearly you get the support of unions. The notion is you got the great support of many workers. So 4 years later, almost, the question becomes, what was the point of the MOU? If all this discontentment exists now, what was the point of the MOU? This is very, very important. Right? Because memorandums of understandings are agreements between parties to fulfill obligations to each other on execution of the agreement. What I am trying to figure out now is what is it that the government is doing that represents a breach of the terms of that agreement to cause these parties to be so agitated. A very disruptive thing, according to the Prime Minister. What's you're not hearing from people, you're not getting what you want. What is actually happening? And what was the point of the MOU? Think about that question for a moment, folks. What is the point of an agreement between ourselves? Remember, see now, when you didn't sign the deed, right? And you make people, you give people power. You can't take that power back from them until the appropriate time comes. Political power, you can't do that. They have the power. You can't make the Prime Minister go the election. He goes when he wants. Even if he thinks he's gonna lose, especially if he thinks he's gonna lose, and he just decide I go to the ninth hour. You didn't give him the power. So if when you sign an agreement with somebody and you give them and they get power, you can't take that power back that you are relying on when you sign an agreement with them. What is it that you're relying on? This memorandum of understanding, does it have legal implications? So can you carry them to court? No, but you signed up with the Progressive Liberal Party. You didn't sign up with the government of arms. But you can take the PLP to the court. And if you take the PLP to court, how is that the same as them now being the government, having responsibilities under the law for the general direction and control of the government? There's only one thing that makes people under those circumstances committed to their obligations. And that's on both sides. It's honor. That's it. It's honor. Will you honor our agreement? Will you represent the spirit and law of that which you and I agreed when you did not have the power? But we don't know whether this represents a breach, because anybody around here, any of you have the MOU? Anybody has a copy of the MOU? Anybody? Anybody? Can you send it to me? Can you send me a copy of the MOU, please? So we could see whether, like, sense. See, Belinda Wilson, in voicing her, in indicating that her members were not taking industrial action, but warning the government that it would only be a temporary reprieve if certain things were not done. And she mentioned, and she was very specific. She said there are 26 questions we have put to the government related to X, Y, and Z, inclusive of the biweekly pay and what have you. So we can say, well, there's that concern relates to her concerns and her members' concerns relate to that or those things. But what else is this? What are the other unions agitated about? We are told I've seen some things floating around about what Obi Ferguson is demanding and so forth and so forth. And I mean, and let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. Politics is no joke. When you get out there and you start agitating for things and the political establishment don't like what you're doing, when they start putting things out on you, they just go for broke. They say Obi Ferguson is trying to ask and ask for that. And they talk about big money things. But we don't know, and particularly what it is. But we do know that a memorandum of understanding was signed that should have mitigated against these things. This text says, good afternoon, sir. How are you doing? Can you help me understand? How is it that we have a certificate for strike and the court order us to go back to work? How does that work? Well, a court can order you to do anything if they believe that what you have been permitted to do has been contrary to the law or requires a judicial review and therefore can stay what you have been authorized to do in order to allow that review to happen. Now, I don't know if a court provided any judgment on this yet. If that has happened, it's new to me. I don't know. This text says, Happy New Year, Shivago. I still keep Lady Seymour a part of my show by saying that's the way my mom used to listen to the show. God rest her soul and push through. Anyway, take care. All the best. You know, I thought about that too, but honestly, it's painful. Yeah, it's painful, man. And so I honor her and remember her memories in the very delicate and more enjoyable ways that I can do so. It's painful to say that. I appreciate you. Says, yes, MOU, my question as well. National Congress of Trade Unions. That's right, National Congress of Trade Unions, right? let me see, we have some other text here. No, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take our first break and pay our respects to our wonderful sponsors. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break. Take a step, everybody.
Are you a business owner or HR professional? RF's team of pension specialists are here to empower your employees with market-leading retirement solutions and to make implementing group pensions easy and cost-effective. With RF, starting or switching your company pension plan is a breeze, and there are no setup fees. If you're looking for strong investment performance and low fees, visit rfgroup.com/empower and empower your team to retire comfortably. .com/empower.
Babe, you mashed the car?
I mashed the car. The lady run into me, mash the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today, or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
We go into this. We go into this. Gonna get them pancakes, waffles, omelets, ribs, breakfast sandwich, love the taste. Try our French toast, stuff your face. Come to Nez Pancake, please. We go into Nez. Yes, we go into Nez. Woo! Gonna eat that chicken and fries, pot and rice, juicy burgers, taste so nice. Crock, comb, chicken wings. Come and try all we things.
Nez Pancake Place, located behind Sunshine Laundromat on Settlers Way. Call 351-5456 to place your order today.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. If you want to give us a call on the show, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316. You can call us from the Family Islands on 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Talking about all of the ruckus involving the unions, their threat to take industrial action because of their dissatisfaction with the government over any number of things that do not altogether appear clear to me, at least I can say. They may be to you, but not entirely clear to me. From my perspective, the question is, you know, I remember the minister responsible for labor, Minister Pierre Glover-Rule, indicating in the House of Assembly how they had managed to settle agreements with I think it was 16 unions, and heralding the fact that that had never been done, and it seemed like things were going exceptionally well. Now there seems to be fermenting action such that Obi Ferguson, who is head of the Trade Union Congress, is threatening this industrial action by the umbrella union. And Prime Minister noting that such a threat would be to break the law, and if such a thing happens, then the government must act. He says, it is curious to me that after days of trying to reach Mr. Ferguson by phone and his apparent refusal to answer his phone, he now publishes a voice note saying with the untruth that my government has not sought to resolve problems, Prime Minister said. And this is according to an article in Nassau Guardian. So things are really not good. Not good. The Prime Minister says, in fact, my diary shows that he had agreed to a meeting tomorrow at 2 p.m. So it is not in bad faith to agree to meet, then tell his members to go on strike. I think he meant not in good faith, right? And he said, I'm not standing on ceremony, though. I am a Prime Minister that wants to resolve problem, said the Prime Minister. So, you know, in the midst of all this disruption, you know, the question is, what was the point of the MOU? Right? That would, we thought, would have mitigated against these kinds of things, but it just goes to show you, man, agreements only matter to the extent that they are lawful and can be therefore enforced by the courts. And also to the extent that otherwise they are honored by the people who signed them. I have a text here said, to this date, the nurses have yet to see or know what's in the MOU after 4 years. Listen to this, right? There's a nurse under Ingram with our then president, then with Minnis. I think this is more about the TUC and the leader's desire to be relevant, okay? All right. So that's the thing, you know. So I hear people now saying that this is something orchestrated by the opposition and all that kind of stuff. First of all, I don't buy that. But if that were true, how is that relevant? if how is that relevant if these same unions, 1 month before an election, signs an understanding with the opposition party, to support that party in an upcoming election 1 month from now? Can you now even hint at this just opposition politics? Of course it's opposition politics with precedence. if that is the truth, then it's opposition politics with precedence. And it just goes to show you, bro, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. It just goes to show you, don't expect people to act one way with you and don't act the same way with other people if they find it is in their interest. Because one thing that we know is said by one author, that men are more often bound together by trust than principle. So it's the interest. This ain't about principles. Principles don't change no matter if it's the night or the day, it's in the north or it's in the south, it's black or white. Principles are principles. They are established foundational rules of life and governance. They don't matter. They don't matter the circumstances. Well, my interest today could be tied to you, but tomorrow could be tied to them other people. And so you can't be crying foul now when you have done something and you are now suggesting, not confirming, because the opposition hasn't signed any MOU with any unions. And I trust and hope that no other opposition in the government of the Bahamas will do any such thing. Why? Because the circumstances of governance has nuances that can manifest differently at the time of governance than they manifest when you are in opposition. And you need to have the flexibility to do the right thing for the people of the Bahamas no matter what. Can't be hollering now, you then sign something with people. Oh, I need to do this on behalf of the people of the Bahamas and look up in the interest of the people of the Bahamas. Why weren't you thinking about that when you were becoming the government for the people of the Bahamas? And that's to all the government, all the parties, all. You got to be careful. Think about these things. That's what it means to be prudent. Prudentiality means you think not merely of the now, but you try to the extent possible to think through the now, the medium term, the long term, so as to get the best results. Political expedient might compel you to do something in the now that might be governmentally inexpedient. Not expedient. That's just the nature of things. And that's true for the government, and that's true for these unions. It says, but Shivago, if the union head has in his possession 14 strike certificates issued by the Department of Labor, and then decides to strike, how can it be deemed illegal? Well, it's not illegal unless declared by the courts illegal. So if they have a strike vote, if they have strike certificates, they have the lawful right to strike. It is only illegal if the courts say it's illegal. So if any politician is saying it's illegal, if they genuinely have a strike certificate that authorizes them to strike, then that don't make no sense to me. But if a court says, no, notwithstanding your strike certificate, I'm going to stay this, or I'm not going to permit this to proceed until, then if you take that industrial action, you will be in contravention of the law. But otherwise, if you have a strike vote, you go to town. That's what a strike vote for. Let me tell you something. I learned this in my lifetime. All of us, and I mean this, we make decisions in the moment that feel good, taste good, smell good. It pleases us, brings us much pleasure. We think this is going to advance me. This can get me ahead. The truth of the matter is, it ain't so. Just not so. That in the process of time, they manifest to cause us a great deal. Personally, collectively, professionally, and otherwise. And you didn't make the decision merely out of maliciousness. You thought this is good for me, this is good for us, etc. But it turns out, no, not good. Right? Because things change. That's the truth. And but more often than not, what you want to do is make principled decisions. If you have made unprincipled decisions, and I think all of us have, you just repent of them, and you have to try and reestablish the principled movement forward for yourself. But learn the lesson, though. Learn the lesson. So this is a good hour for the lesson. Don't mind human beings, buddy. If two people who say they love each other to death walking down an aisle before the preacher and Almighty God could turn around and hate each other and walk away, what do you think with union and government? Human union and politician. What you think keeping them together? Love? What's the issue? What's going on? What is driving this anxiety, this consternation? I told you all before. Next year's must be. It could be an election before next year, mind you. But next year's election, you ain't see flexing power. Every voter on every voting group, every voting block in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas know who in charge now. Who need who more now? Every single one know. And they will act accordingly. It now is as old as elections themselves. Be sure of it. So I don't want no politician on any side of the political divide now crying no crocodile tears about who only making political trouble. And who don't, please. Do not treat us like that. We've been around long enough to have seen every single grouping acting on their own behalf and in their own interest to get elected or to stay. Don't give me that now. This is not good for the people. This is not good for the country, etc. I'm saying you can say that and that might well be true, but people understand that that was also true when you acted in the way you acted when you thought it was in your interest to get or keep power. So your statements have to be examined in the context of the situation in which you find yourself. Remember, it is said oftentimes that where you stand oftentimes depends on where you sit. Oftentimes. Hubert Ingham used to say to me all the time, he said, Shivago, always do in government what you can live with when you are out of government, and vice versa. Always do in outer government what you can live with when you're in government. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break. I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
All those loans I had were so overwhelming. Fidelity's debt consolidation loan combined all my with a built-in savings plan that pays me unbeatable interest. It's time to make that move to Fidelity. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
You try to rest, but roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers. For window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Wait, why you look so mashed up, like clothes at the washer?
No, wait, just a hard day. Wait.
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking with everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
But it was serious. Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave this boy one big contract. And nobody else get a chance, and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody's saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he sent me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I's a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crack Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us today. If you want to call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316. From the Family Islands, 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. This text says, good day, Mr. Lang. What is your opinion on the purpose of 50% cut on VAT at food store? I think it is an election ploy, or maybe new taxes will be added to the public in this upcoming year to cover the 50% government lost. Hmm. Ask me and say, you think this is an election ploy? Whenever a government is in office, whatever they are doing, they hope is going to benefit you so that they remain popular with you so that they can come to office, stay in office. So it is irrelevant to me whether it is an election ploy or not. Any sensible government acts in a way that benefits its society so that the society regards it as beneficial and therefore maintains its popularity. Now, that isn't always possible because sometimes you have to make judgments and decisions that simply run contrary to what people would want you to do. For instance, raising taxes, instituting procedures and rules that may be uncomfortable for the society. So that's governance. But by and large, politicians are not stupid. I mean, I know some of you all really think so, but generally speaking, I mean, by not stupid, they want to do things that keep them popular, but that's not always possible, right? So cutting taxes is a good thing for the consumer and the taxpayer. There's no question about that. It's a good thing. Whether that moves you to like the government or not, that's on you. But I mean, if the government cuts a tax, that's a good thing for the taxpayer. Want me to say, that's the PLP doing it. Why would you say something such a thing? I couldn't care less if it was the PLP, FNM, DDP, DDG, or so forth. And next, if a government cuts taxes, it's good for a taxpayer. Now, will that save a government, or will that help a government, or will that make a government more popular? Well, that's on you. I don't get to decide that. I just know that it can't be bad for a taxpayer to pay less taxes, no matter when the tax cut comes. If it comes a year before election, 2 years before election, 3 years before election, it's all the same thing in terms of it's good for the taxpayer. This text says, Mr. Lang, in cases like emergency facilities, what precautions do these places take to ensure there's little to no casualties as a result of their strike? For example, if you have a doctor or hospital strike, do they leave people there that can sustain the people depending on them while the strike is in progress? Or do I get the wrong perception on what constitutes a strike with the wrong understanding that employees just halt their duties? Well, I mean, the point of a strike is to cause such pain to the organization you are striking on so as to compel them to act in your interest. So, no, generally the strikers aren't sitting around going, okay, let's keep enough doctors and nurses on hand so that they don't feel any disruption. Well, they want you to feel the disruption. So if the government isn't able, and in most instances it's not able to find substitutes to make up the difference, sometimes they use people in management who have expertise in that area, the police force or the defense force, who may have people with some expertise to do something, not in the emergency room and the like, but some people who could man stations and stuff like that, you do that. But that's the whole point of strikes. A strike is saying, I want you to feel what it is like not to have me available. That's the whole point. When your people start crying, I can't have the surgery I need urgently. When your people start crying, oh, well, the doctor is there to do the surgery, but not enough nurses to be able to conduct the surgery. That's the point of the strike, to create disruption. And if you have a strike that doesn't create sufficient disruption, your strike is in vain. That's what the withdrawal of labor is supposed to do. Help you to know, cause you to know, bro, straighten me out, or otherwise your organization will be paralyzed and damaged. And in the instance of the public service, the public will be severely impacted. And depending on the severity of that impact, public either gets angry, get angry with the government, or they get angry with the unions and the government. The difference between the two is unions ain't trying to get elected by the government. They get elected by their members. The government trying to get elected by their members and the union's members and the public. Okay? And when you see doctors and nurses start striking, they see this as a heart attack because they know how critical their functions are. They know that. Anyways, I am not, I respect unions. I respect the need for unions. I've always believed that unions help to improve the work conditions of workers. I am under no delusions that some union leaders are awful in terms of their competence, in terms of the character that they demonstrate on occasions. I'm not under any delusions that some unions are vested in their partisanship politically, whether they're FNM or PLP or COI or whatever else they may be. I am not under any delusions that some union leadership could be just outright selfish in carrying out their duties and responsibilities and can act imprudently, et cetera. But as a general rule, I believe unions are helpful to workers in a way that to be true. And I certainly believe in ability to organize, their freedom to organize, their lawful right to organize, and to not be impeded from such organization by the state. When we come back from the news break, my good friend Anton made some comments on Howard Grant's show that I want to comment on. Anton said that people had to remember that the Progressive Liberal Party, the Davis administration, recently reduced VAT on all items by half. And he wanted to remind the people that the Minnis administration increased VAT by 60%. He wanted to remind them that how what that meant, and all kinds of services, they increase VAT. And I thought that there was a little bit of short-sightedness on Antoine's part in citing that, which when we come back from the break, I will speak to. I mean, because if that's an argument, if Minnis increasing VAT by 60% should be regarded by the public as a real problem, then the point that that happened was a real short-sighted point in light of other things. And we'll talk about those other things when we come back from the news break. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after the news break.
Take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. If you want to give us a call on the show, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316. You can call us from the Family Islands on 242-300-5720. You can text us on 4224796, or you can WhatsApp me on 4393043. So my good friend, Anton, doing as Anton does, making points that would support his party, and sometimes he would make points that doesn't support his party, so I want to acknowledge that. But Anton was obviously trying to soften some of the criticism that the government, that the Minnis administration increased VAT by 60% on all items. So Anton wanted to make that clear. This was increasing VAT by 60%, taking it from 7.5% to 12% on all items. So the percentage increase, the percentage point increase that the Minnis administration made was a 5.5 percentage point increase. And Anton thought, wanted to remind people of how crazy that was and what that meant for the cost of people, because it was on all items, etc. Now, if that is true, and that is true, that's what the Minnis administration did. It increased VAT by 60%, taking it from 7.5% to 12%. But if that is true, if that is true, that that kind of pain was terrible, right? And he wanted to remind people about this, even though Minnis is not the leader of the Free National Movement anymore, and Michael Pintard is the leader and promising to produce his own brand of whatever governance. Anton didn't remember, but there was a time in the Bahamas when VAT was zero. Zero. On all those items, on every item in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, VAT was zero. Zero. No VAT on food items, no VAT on deli items, no VAT on restaurant food, no VAT on medical services, no VAT on funeral services, no VAT on everything. How did we get a VAT that the Minnis administration was able to increase by 60%? Because the Progressive Liberal Party under Mr. Christie to VAT on everything. No exemptions. No exemptions. There were some zero-rated items, a few, but no exemptions on anything, nothing, not food, not drinks, not real estate, not medical transactions, nothing, from 0 to 7.5%. So you go from 0 to 7.5%, which was a 7.5% percentage point increase versus a 5.5 percentage point increase. So if the one was bad, the other was worse. So we have to have arguments that balance, that make, that are principled, right? Because if it's bad to increase something by 60%, it's bad to increase something infinitely from zero to something. Because that's what it was. This wasn't a doubling. This wasn't a tripling. This was going from 0 to 7.5%. So who's better, FNM or PLP? Who's not a problem, FNM or PLP? One introduces, the other increases. The other decreases, but not decreases to the point that they introduced it. The other decreases it and then puts it on items on which it did not exist under the other people. And now the other one decreases it, but doesn't, decreases it on all things, but don't decrease it on all things to the point that they introduced it. So it went from 12% to 10%, but not to 7.5%. So who gets to brag about FAT? FNM, PLP, like really? Any of anyone gets to brag about not taxing millions? Really? Fact of the matter is, it is rarely irrational to be trying to get brownie points on VAT, on taxation. It really is. The only way to get brownie points on taxation is to remove them. When you remove a tax, you get brownie points. If you introduce a tax, you won't get no brownie points. If you reduce a tax, you can get some props, but you ain't really moving, right? I mean, you get some brownie points for reducing the tax, but in our country, so I pointed out. So Dr. Minnis says remove the VAT altogether on food, on all the foods. But when Dr. Minnis had an opportunity to increase the VAT, he increased it on everything, but he removed it on bread basket items. But he could have increased it on all kinds of things and not increased it on food. But that wasn't what he did. Maybe he didn't feel at the time that that was necessary, right? So when he had an opportunity to do that, he did not. When Prime Minister Davis had an opportunity, when he was saying in the height of the cost of living crisis we had, to remove the VAT on food items, he did not. And even when he did take an opportunity to do so, as he is taking come April, he hasn't removed it. He's just halved it. So who is pure breed here? Who is Puritan? Nobody. Nobody. Because at the end of the day, what you are finding is that your government is finding the revenue from VAT so useful, so critical and important, that they rarely want to give it back to you. They do not. Right? Minister Halkidis says that the government is going to lose. Listen to these words. He says the government is going to lose $40 million from VAT revenue, from the cut. $40 million. But you know, how are you losing that if the government says its forecast is not going to be in? Are you losing, or are you like, or is VAT going to do something different? Let me tell you how you may not lose. Because if you reduce fat, and for whatever reason people feel like they could spend a little more now because they save a little bit more, well, that increases your base in spending, and therefore the remaining taxation, you could actually get more in taxes than before you made the cut. So let's say you get 10% on 100 right now, which is 10, right? But then you reduce it by 5%, and that reduction causes people to spend 200. Well, now if the 5% on the 200 means you get the same 10, you didn't lose anything. If it makes them spend 300, if it induces that, then now you get 15 back, so you actually gain 10. It all depends on how elastic the relationship is between VAT and spending and how that contributes to economic growth. We don't know, I don't know, but I'm just saying those are some scenarios that could put you in better stead so that you actually don't lose at all. Stack says, good day, Lang. Help me with this. If Minnis raised that VAT 60% and took VAT off medication and bread basket and Brad Davis, take the 2% off and put 10% on everything which is feasible to the Bahamians, then later down to take 5% of the 10% on food and didn't take the 10% on medication, where is the win for the people? Well, first of all, your numbers aren't altogether correct because you said and took VAT off of medication and bread basket. So Brave Davis takes 2% off and put 10% on everything which is feasible. Okay, I'm sorry. You're right. I'm sorry, you're right. Well, you say where's the win for the people? I honestly, there are scenarios in which there is no win, depending on people's spending habits and circumstances. For instance, if you never have to go to the doctor and spend money on the doctor, well, having VAT on medicine isn't an issue for you. But if you have to go to the doctor, VAT is an issue for you. If you don't have to bury anybody anytime soon, you don't have to pay VAT on funeral services, that doesn't impact you. But if you have to pay VAT, it does depend on people's circumstances. What I do know is this, and I can tell you all this again. If you see the government has to explain to people too much how what it has done for them is good for them, it is what they have done is not good enough for them. That's the bottom line, right? So all the proof is in the pudding and in the eating of the taxpayer. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you.
Hey, Brother Lang, good afternoon.
Hey, what's going on?
Everything's well. Listen, only thing I called for, I really appreciate and enjoyed the example that you gave in terms of the contrast or how if we were to spur the economic spending of persons by giving them incentives, how government would not lose. Basically, what it is an offset, whereas when they give a little, you then encourage people to spend even a little more than what they had anticipated in spending because they got that little economic boost to spend.
Depending on the person, they may decide
to spend $100, but with the little boost, they may decide then to spend $150, $175. That is not a win-loss. That is not even a loss. That's actually a gain for the government because it inspires persons to spend more money.
Hello. One minute. I just really want you to qualify it. It does depend on how elastic the relationship is between spending and taxation. Right? It does depend. So I don't want to give the example without qualifying it. It depends on the relationship between taxing and spending. Hello, go ahead. Hello. Hey, we might have lost him. You can call back. This text says the pendulum has swung hard and unforgiving against the PLP. The people are tired, disillusioned, and fed up with empty promises and failed leadership. Brave, the writing is on the wall. The clock is ticking louder and louder with every passing day. In the words of Belinda Wilson, tick-tock, says that texter. This text says, great show as usual. Why bring up Minis, a.k.a. lockdown? He ain't in power. Well, yeah, people sometimes make their point has to lean back. And so that's what sometimes happens, okay? So a lot of, you know, when you're in government, but you just like, one of the things you abide by is if you're trying to stay in power, don't leave anything on the table, right? So if you can do something you think helps, don't leave it on the table. You know, the problem is what you do, it matters how people perceive it. It also matters how people realize it. So if you do something, like you really have to live. So if you do something, you gotta make sure people feel it. You know, like make sure they feel it. If you can take the action anyhow, you have to make sure people feel it. Now, you have to check that against what it might cost you in terms of governance. But here's what is true. Very often, in order for, especially on matters of taxation, in order for people to feel it, the government has to feel it in the opposite. All right? If the government don't feel it immediately or in the short run, chances are it isn't really benefiting people immediately and in the short run. Right? So on taxation matters, what happens oftentimes is you have to take the cut so deep that people feel it. They go like, wow, man, that's helping me. And then the government says, that's really taking a bite out of my revenue. But in the long term, the savings to the taxpayer puts monies in their pockets that does other things that manifest in benefits to the economy in the medium and long term. And that's where the government gets defeated. But if the government can't take any short-term pain, then it half steps. And in that half stepping, people don't feel it. And so you've taken an action that has really produced no real good for you. Right? People have to feel the benefit of an action taken by the government. I mean, that's the point of taking the action. I want to feel that I'm better off. I mean, literally feel that I'm better off. Now, here's the other problem. If the government takes an action that can be countered by other actions, then they are not in control of the effect of their action on the taxpayer. So let me give you an example. The government raises minimum wage. Well, there is a group of people, not a lot, not the majority of people in the Bahamas. The majority of people in the Bahamas make above minimum wage. It doesn't matter what you think. The truth is, the majority of people in the Bahamas make above minimum wage. If the government increases minimum wage for those people the minority people who don't make minimum wage, then if those people have their employers countered by reducing their hours of work so that they are right back where they started or worse, then the people don't feel the benefit of the minimum wage is hourly. So before I was making $220 a week, say, before the government increased minimum wage, the government increases minimum wage such that the potential for me might be to make $270. But my employer reduces my hours of work so that I'm back to making $220. So I don't have an impact. Meaning, the action of the government does not itself alone determine the outcome or benefit to the taxpayer. So that's another reality that the government has to contend with if it's trying to do a thing that they want the people to benefit from and to be able to get some popular support for. Public policy is dynamic, involves many factors, some of which are not within your control. So governments have to determine sometimes, let me do things that nobody can count on. No one. This is entirely in my hands. No one can counter this. You want me to give you an example of one of those things? If you decide to double on imports that you buy abroad when you travel and come home, so you go from 500 every time to $1,000 every time twice a year, that makes you now possible to get an exemption of not $1,000 but $2,000 for the year. No one can counter that. There's nothing anyone can do to counter that. That's if you're traveling, that's yours, that's you, you get that. Let me give you another example. If you're poor, right, as defined by the government, and the government says, you know what, I'm going to give every such person who fits into that definition a subvention of $1,000. No one can counter that. Yeah, prices could go up, but they can go up, but then you see that that's on them though. That's on the people who raise the price. But in terms of what I've been able to get from the government, I got $1,000. So governments wanting to have an impact that's undisputed have to do things that others cannot counter, which oftentimes mean providing a direct benefit to the taxpayer. Direct. You can't counter this. All right? Okay. So you want to buy a home. And the government says, you know what? I am not going to charge any VAT on any home bought by any Bahamian. No VAT. Who could counter that? Nobody could counter that. Because even if they say, oh, I'm going to go up on the price of a home. Yeah, but that means I'm going up on the price, on the amount of exemption you're going to get for that home. And you still win. But what we keep doing, what the government keeps doing in instances, is we keep doing things that can be countered by others. And therefore, people don't feel it. Don't feel it. Right? Another something that you can do that people can't counter. The government gives its employees a raise. No one can counter that. I gave you a raise. That goes to your salary every month. No one can counter that. Yeah, they could raise prices, but still, we have a call on the line still. Do we have a caller? Caller?
Hello.
Hi, thank you for your patience. Sorry, I didn't see the note.
Hey, yeah, Mr. Lang, good afternoon. How you doing?
Oh, yeah, man, good. So glad you called back. Sorry you got...
Mr. Lang, help me to understand this, right? First of all, let me applaud the Minister of Labor, Minister Peel Glover Roll, right? The work that she's been doing. But it seems, is she fighting? Is this battle too big for her? Because, according to her and the government, they have done so much work with these unions. But the unions are saying, we are not feeling it. Is there a disconnect somewhere?
It's not too big for her. Because remember, Pia Glover is a minister who operates in a cabinet government. So she isn't running around the place doing her thing. She's doing what the government has agreed.
If it's too big
for the government. You can't say, I happen to think that Pia Glover, she appears to be focused and so forth, right? But again, what she is doing is government's work.
But no, I understand, right? But presently there are, 16 strike vote against the government? And I mean, that says that all is not well. That's something.
Well,
I mean, yeah. Something. If she is working so hard to resolve all these issues, and you have 16 people who are threatening to shut down the country.
But now let's be real though. Let's be real though, bro. You and I both know that sometimes people could be working hard to do things, but if you are not giving me what I want, I still ain't satisfied, so I'll do what I have to do.
But it seems like they're just throwing little crumbs at them, and they're not getting no meat.
Obviously, the unions are not satisfied. So that's the obvious thing. The unions are not satisfied, so you're right in that regard. Whatever it is they are doing, that they think they're doing, that they think they're doing hard, that is clear.
Because
whether they are being reasonable or not, that's a different question.
And according to Mr. Obi Ferguson, he said they have met with the prime minister. They have talked and talked and talked. They have met with him on many occasions, and they, according to him, is just the same old talk and talk and no action. So
Caller, let me tell you something. It's very interesting that you say that. Now, I want people to know, I don't run around making things up. Let me tell you, among the things that I am hearing from people, this is among the things, and maybe perhaps in the Prime Minister's office, they may want to take note of this. And I'm hearing this from people who have had insider track on this notion. I'm hearing that people go to meetings with the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister agrees a course of action for them, and that once they leave the meeting, they can see no results arising from the Prime Minister's mandate. This is what I have been advised and told by any number of people, significant people.
Like, I alluded to the same thing because I know of a personal incident, right, where the individual told me that she was in the meeting with the Prime Minister and the FS, and the Prime Minister told the FS to make sure the individual gets her promotion and whatever she was entitled to. That has been 3.5 years, and nothing
happened. I have heard of such instances. I've heard of investors who have sat in meetings with the Prime Minister, been assured that a thing is agreed and so forth and so forth. It then ends up in the hands of some other minister, and they are not. They're seen 2 weeks later. This is months and months later, still without resolve.
And so, like I said,
something's wrong with that. I could tell you one thing, yes. My brother, I served with Hubert Alexander Ingram, and that was not possible.
At the end of the day, the buck stops with the Prime Minister.
Absolutely. Okay?
All of these people, they serve at his pleasure.
Pleasure, absolutely.
And if they, according to Antoine, if they're not doing what they're supposed to do, the Prime Minister need to cut some people loose, man. This is a new year, Prime Minister. You got
let me tell you
something. To win. It is yours to win.
Let me tell you something. Ingram used to... If Ingram asks you about a thing, and whatever period of time, it could be a day later, it could be a week later. What's going on?
Right.
What's going on? And you better move on it.
Yes. I mean, if you give somebody an initiative, you don't follow up to find out, well, you know, what progress has been made. You just leave it out there and see all of these things are now blowing right back. And it's going to fall at the Prime Minister's feet. Heavy the head,
bears
the crown.
Absolutely. Right. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you're so busy as Prime Minister, you have so many things going on that it is possible in a meeting for you to issue an edict and for somebody to not follow through on it. And you might not remember until somebody complains and what have you. But in those circumstances, what you got to do is you got to delegate the follow-up to somebody.
Yeah, but it's nice.
P.S. This one, that one. Listen, man, track that.
Yes. You are paying people big bucks, okay? These people are living, some of these are making 6- and 7-figure salaries, okay? And if the Prime Minister shouldn't be, you know, if you have an assistant, you have all of these people who are around you. I mean, they should be the one that just, you know, okay, Prime Minister, this is finished. Prime Minister, this is, but it seems like it, anything but of course, man. And like, and it, you know, and we can't run a country like this, man. We need order from the top right to the bottom.
Thank you for calling, brother. We appreciate you calling. Let's text him, Mr. Lang. Which prime minister were these investors in meetings with? Man, you're only trying to cause mischief. They told me they were in a meeting with Prime Minister Davis. His text says, the last time minimum wage was increased, the cost of goods and living increased along with it. Rather, it's by increased taxes or increased base rate for different goods and services. That's true. You see, that's, again, a counter you can get. So good observation, right? Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
Do you have uncontrollable debt? Are you ready to make that move to Fidelity for a stress-free future? These loans have a built-in savings plan that pays you unbeatable interest. Ask about our debt consolidation loans today. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
I ain't mashed the car. The lady run into me mashed the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Hey, Uncle Pat, where you going?
I
going for pancakes 7 o'clock in the evening?
Yeah, that is close 8, but I ain't only getting pancake. Junior want a mango barbecue burger. Nadia want a honey garlic wings and fries. Justin want chicken and waffles. And Grammy want that famous batch in rice.
Should have sell all that?
And more. In fact, Sunday gone, we had steam oxtail, crab and rice, and coleslaw with ice cream and snow cone for dessert.
I go on the Nays with you.
Well, let's go then.
I'm coming now.
Nays Pancake Place, serving breakfast all day, lunch and dinner too. Located behind Sunshine Laundromat, next to the fire station on Settlers Way. Call 351-5456 to place your order today. That's Nays Pancake Place. Pancake Place.
I'm coming now.
Along from a Bohemian mountain on his plate. He act like he never eat before and he didn't eat no more. He had five pieces of chicken, macaroni and cheese.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand.
Welcome back to Z Live, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 from the Family Islands, 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp. Can I say something to you all gratuitously? You all like guava duff? Anybody? I love guava duff. And I want my guava duff sauce spiked, right? I promise you, and this has been invented in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, nowhere else in the world. I promise you. If you never taste a pancake duff, guava duff, a pancake guava duff, you ain't taste nothing yet. I'm telling you, people. I had a lady stop me the other day and say, listen, Mr. Lang, you need to get the word out on that. Because, man, that is something. Listen to me. I am telling you, Pancake Bob enough. It is something. Invented in the Bahamas. Yeah, get that at IO. You have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Good afternoon, Chicago Sean Lang.
Hey, Anton. I know you some call. you call looking for Pancake Wobba Duffy.
I call a rumble.
Okay, rumble, bro. Rumble on. What's happening?
How you doing, Chicago?
Man, I'm good.
And good afternoon to the nation. Chicago. Now, you know it didn't go down exactly, are you?
It didn't go down? No, tell me how it didn't go down. Tell me how it didn't go down.
Well, you know, at the time when Christie, former Prime Minister, the Right Honorable Terry Gladstone Christie, implemented VAT, there was a nationwide consultative process involved.
Anton, don't do that. Let's don't do that today. Listen to me. Was there a VAT before there was a VAT introduced? Was there a VAT?
Absolutely not.
Okay, so you went from zero VAT on everything to 7.5% VAT on everything. So what? That's all I said. What was the difference? What does consultation have to do with that impact on people?
For the mere fact that our financial services, as you very well know, would have come to a halt had the Prime Minister Christie not taken that step in that direction.
Anton, you're talking to me, man. You're talking to Chicago Show Online. You're talking to me, Anton.
I understand.
You're speaking to me, Anton. Come on.
Here's my next concern, right, Chicago? Where that is concerned. Then I want to talk about something that you just talked about before your break. Right?
Right.
The immediate past Prime Minister, right?
Mm-hmm.
In his opposition, he derailed the PLP about implementing VAT, right?
Absolutely.
He took the PLP to war, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. What he said it was a lazy way.
It's a lazy man's way out who can't take his way out of a wet paper bag.
Yeah.
And then he turned around, and it seems as though some of his cabinet ministers wasn't even aware.
And then he got kicked out of office. Now,
and he's spun the country with that 60% VAT.
Now what? So he get kicked out of office. Now what? The PLP railed him for doing it and criticized him for being a hypocrite for saying I was with lazy way out. But when the PLP came to office, did they take the VAT back to 7.5%?
Absolutely not.
Okay. All right.
Absolutely not.
So you know all of these administrations is taxing them. They love that VAT. They love that VAT. They love that VAT, boy. All that VAT money was juicy.
As you very well know, the nation can't survive without that VAT money.
What about money juice? Anton, you know what it is to start collecting in the first instance of $500 million a year and now up to $1 billion new money? $1 billion, bro?
You know, Chicago, why are we talking about that, right? Let me just add this in, right? Because clearly with your experience, your know-how and your expertise. Right, you can add to what I'm about to say, and it is that what this also tells me, Chicago, when you look at the fact that, and yes we are seeing a reduction from the debt to GDP side. However, factor in all of the crying with all of the agreements with the various unions across the country, right, Chicago? It says to me that the VAT increase that we have experienced is not enough. Either that or we are not collecting nearly enough revenue to truly run the country the way we need to run it,
right? But Anton, with the greatest respect, let me tell you something. That the analysis has to be much more rigorous.
I agree.
Than that, and I'm being serious. And I'm being serious with this because here's the thing.
Yes.
I want you to imagine this. Think about this, Anton. So right. Forget the PLP. Forget the FNM. Let's not get caught up in that argument. I came to you and I said, Anton, do you know that something is extracting $500 million out of the pockets of Bahamians on an annual basis now? What would you say?
I'm saying,
what would you say if I told you something is now extracting $500+ million out of the pockets of Bahamians? What would you say about something like that?
I would say if it's justified, if we can see where the money is being used to benefit the country, to help to grow the country, or to help to reinvigorate or bring new infrastructure for the further advancement and development of the country, then I would say yes. That extraction directly out of the pockets of the Bahamian people is a good thing.
Okay. Okay. Now, that's Anton speaking. Now, here's Shivago Lang, who understands economics very deeply.
Right.
If I said that to most economists, they would say that is a challenge to economic growth.
Okay.
They would say $500 million that's $500 million not going to be spent by the public, saved by the public, etc., placed in the hands of and they'll ask me who did the extraction, and I'd say government,
right.
And then they would say, well, that's going to be not as a productive a use for the economy as it would be in the hands of the private sector. And then, so now, when you look at the economic growth of the country...
It doesn't necessarily have to mean that, though.
Well, listen, that's why I'm going to say to you, Anton, let me explain something to you, bro. Listen to me. This is Shivago Lang. I am I'm not bragging. I am telling you what I spend my life doing.
Yes,
my life doing. Okay, so let me tell you something. If you look at economic VAT, it has been subdued.
Okay.
Subdued, bro. And there is no question in my mind that a part of that subduing is the shift in hundreds of millions of dollars from the private sector into the public sector. And guess what is true?
And isn't it why they consider it a regressive tax?
Public sector's finances pre-pandemic did not get astoundingly better.
Okay.
It did not. In fact, when you quote the reduction in debt to GDP ratio, you are comparing an extraordinary period of voluntary economic downturn
to some degree,
Anton, listen to me.
Yeah.
When the pandemic hit, 3 years after the pandemic, when the pandemic hit, IDB, IMF, Shivago Lang, and others were able to say that nothing extraordinary happening, the Bahamas will return to pre-pandemic growth in 2024. Why would we be able to say that? We didn't know who the government would be. We didn't care who the government would be.
Right.
We were able to say that. We knew we had voluntarily turned down our economy.
Right.
And guess what happened in 2024? Guess what happened in 2024?
The reason why I add in that to some degree is for this factor and this factor. For the pandemic, that could have maintained a greater balance for the economy while seeking to save lives. That is why I say that.
Yeah, but Anton, listen, that's apples and oranges, because everything I quoted to you was pre-pandemic, because the pandemic is an extraordinary circumstance in the economic history of the country.
Yes,
when the Bahamas has never experienced a contraction of its economy by anything close to 21%.
On that same topic right there, on that same point. Right there. Let me ask an important question, Tobago. Yes, it was an extraordinary circumstance. Yes, it was one of those situations that causes pause to take place in the country that will impact adversely the country's finances as well as the country's healthcare system. But tell me this, Tobago.
in your expert view, do you feel as though the management of any such circumstance, whether it be now, whether it be 5 years, 10, or 50 years into the future, do you think that the management, the precise management, if the pandemic could make it better or worse?
I also believe okay. that in the early days of the pandemic, I think right. that the management was excellent. I think that the management became flawed. I believe yes. the management became flawed when it was time to consider the opening.
Mm.
But I also believe that there is nothing astoundingly or significant that has been done by the Davis administration terms of promoting a recovery of the economy, saving and except for not finding ways to mess that up. And to their credit, they didn't find ways to mess up that recovery. But that recovery started strong under the administration.
I hear you, but you know, as you very well know, Tobago,
you don't need to hear me. You could just go look at the numbers.
All I want to add, going right back to the same point of management and management styles and timing of decision making, that was key in what the Davis administration was able to do differently than what the minister administration wasn't doing with the exception of the first 3 months.
Anton, you are talking nonsense. Let me tell you why. Listen to me. In 2021, the Bahamian economy recovered to the tune of precedented 15.4% in terms in 2021. The PLP came to office in September 21 of that year. September 21, brother?
Yes.
14.5%. Every year since that time, the recovery slowed.
We all understood that there would be a rushing to the gate coming out of the pandemic, and then there was.
Let me tell you something, bro. I try to be fair. You say you try to be fair, and I believe that. Here's what I'm not prepared to do. I'm not prepared to allow for the recovery continuing under the Davis administration, and then condemn the recovery that robustly started under the Minister's administration, as we know there was going to be a rush to.
We knew
there was going to be a continuing rush for the Bahamas because of its proximity to the United States of America, given the pent-up need.
I'm not one of those, Shivago, who is not prepared to acknowledge that the turnaround did start under the Minister's administration. I'm not one of those who is prepared to take that road.
Prime Minister Davis is one of them, though.
No. I disagree with that. That's the reason why.
I listened to the Prime Minister's speeches. The Prime Minister said when he came to office, he met an economy in free fall.
Right.
Those are his words. So this isn't a question to disagree with that. You have his words say it. And when he came to office, he met an economy robustly recovering from the pandemic.
Okay, Shivago, if I could just add in then, and guide me if you feel I'm wrong in what I'm saying, right?
Okay.
We had a debt to GDP of over 100% when Prime Minister Davis took office. Correct, Shivago?
Yes.
Okay. In economic terms and in the economic realm, wouldn't that be considered falling off the cliff financially?
No, it would not. No, it would not, because we don't narrowly analyze things. First of all, the debt to GDP ratio. I forget Malabukaran. Are you talking to Shivago Lang?
Okay.
Forget that.
All right.
We're talking about the sense of things we can see. Okay. The debt. If you shrink your economy, shrink your economy by 15%, and at the same time continuing to borrow at the same clip, it is a natural consequence for the debt to GDP ratio to swell.
Right.
If you then therefore turn up your economy and it continues to grow back to normal, it is a natural thing for that debt to GDP ratio to fall to 80%+. We all knew that was going to happen before the pandemic even rolled out.
Based on what you just said, and I agree with you entirely. Let me ask you this then, Shivago. What was being done by the Minister administration to bring that turnaround in the economy, in your view, as an economist?
Absolutely nothing other than turning back the economy back up. Nothing.
Mm. Okay.
Nothing.
Other than
reversing what they had done to shatter the economy.
Okay, let me ask you this too, Chibag. I'll end right here. Do you believe it is fair to say that many of the policies implemented by the Davis administration was also a part of what enhanced further
I do not. And the reason for that is enhancement means you get better growth. But the fact of the matter is our growth has been going down from the time every year from the Davis administration took office. Every year.
Okay.
Every year. But I don't even blame them for that. I don't blame them for that. That is not on them. That's a natural consequence of reestablishing the norms in your economy.
Right.
So
right.
if they had done some things that were extraordinary, you would have seen that decline take place less quickly. And rather than return to pre-pandemic growth, we would have returned to growth above pre-pandemic.
But Shabab, I can leave you with this one. There was the revenue enhancement unit, which turned in tens of millions of dollars under the Davis administration.
But Anton, that's the same mistake you are making. Anton, let me tell you something. You're making the same mistake I accuse the Minnesota administration of, and I accuse this administration of.
What is that?
You can have good government revenue that's bad for the economy. That's because taxation and economic growth are inverse to each other.
I agree. I do not disagree with your perspective at all, Chivago. I completely support what you just said entirely. However, all I am saying is, while that is about there could be good revenue collection and representation on the books for the government, which spells disaster for the people in actuality, because it's taking extracting, as you put it, even more money directly out of the private sector pockets. All I'm saying is, even in that process, VAT was increased. The VAT numbers after the reduction, the 10%, the government realized far more than it actually projected when it conducted those studies, which you and the policy administration division of UB was a part of, because y'all did the groundwork in helping the government to formulate that final decision in reducing the budget.
That is not true, actually. That's not true. Our report never recommended to the government to do what it did.
It said, I remember what you were
saying, if the government was doing this along with something else. See, you can read the report. You can read the report. I'm not saying the government did the wrong thing. I'm just saying, don't say that it was our recommendation that led the government to do that. That's not true.
It didn't show a net negative nor a net positive. Okay?
Yeah, we didn't. Yeah, we didn't. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it. We got like 2 minutes left. I think we have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yes. Mr. Lang.
Hi, hey, C. Allen, what's up?
I know time has run out. Just let me say, the part that you miss is the fact that Dorian took an impact on the economy, wiping out, 15, 20% of an economy, and then we went straight into the COVID. So when you
That's not true. Dorian took place in what year?
2019.
Okay, in 2019, the Bahamian economy contracted by 1.4% in real terms. 1.4%.
But I'm saying to you, those 3 or 4 months of impact, when they did the report in the new year, we started straight into Dorian in February of 2020. And so we never had a time to rebuild that economy or recover. So that was a cascading impact on our revenue from that point
forward. I will agree with you. I agree with you 100% on that. All right. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I'm plumb out of time. Sorry, I can't read some of your other comments, etc. Yeah, Anton took a long time, but I wanted to make sure we dispel some of the myths. Oh, boy. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Chivago Lang, your host. I trust and hope that you have a great evening. God spares life. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Be well.
Start the year making moves. Budgeting and saving? Yes. Investing? Check. But what if you could do more? With an RF brokerage account, you can get priority access to local investment opportunities right as they come to the market. Never miss a bond or new share offering again. Plus, you can house all your investments in one place and benefit from expert investment advice. Contact us at brokerage@rfgroup.com to start doing more today. Some conditions apply. RF, money at work.
The holidays are here, and Dunkin' is spreading the cheer this season. Let Dunkin' be a part of your celebrations. Warm up with your favorite holiday drinks. Grab a box of our famous donuts for your gatherings, or treat someone special to a Dunkin' gift certificate, the gift that always runs on joy. From our Dunkin' family to yours, we wish you a season filled with laughter, love, and a whole latte happiness. Happy holidays, and remember, the Bahamas runs on Dunkin'.